We're joined now, happily and luckily, by Zafar Bengash. Are you there, sir?
Hello, Phil. Yes, I am. I don't know why we keep on having this difficulty with respect to connecting. I was checking my phones and I sort of, you know, and I wasn't able to figure out what's happening because there were no messages. And then all of a sudden, I get this message that, that you know, somebody is trying to reach me. So we're connected.
We're dogged. Zafar, thank you very much for joining us because, you know, we have these burning issues. Today's New York Times, let's start with the one that is close to your heart, I know, because it's a story of Kashmir. We want to make sure we talk about that, as well as the developments with Turkey, Syria. But Kashmir is on, you know, I guess it's made the front page of the New York Times today, so it's being talked about for this day. But you've pointed out over the years that Kashmir, there's been some sort of agreement amongst the powers not to talk about Kashmir.
Now, yes, unfortunately. Why? I mean, you know, this has gone on for more than almost 70 years now. And that's because today the world powers don't want to talk about it because India, basically, they see India as a bulwark against China. They see it as a sort of emerging market and so on. So they are more concerned about emerging markets rather than emerging human rights. Basically, that's what it is. And the price, of course, is paid by the poor Kashmiri people. In the latest sort of, you know, protest that erupted immediately after the extrajudicial killing of one of the freedom fighters, a young man, 22-year-old, his name was Burhan Wani. He was basically surrounded by Indian forces, and then together with two of his colleagues, he was murdered on July the 8th. And the very next morning, there were more than 200,000 people that poured out into the streets for his funeral service. Of course, the Indian army immediately clamped down a curfew, but people were not going to, you know, care for that curfew. So another 7-8 people were shot dead. During the funeral procession, about 20-25 people were wounded. And since that time, which is July the 9th to the present day, there has been round-the-clock curfew in Kashmir. In most major cities in Kashmir, about 80 to 90 people have been killed. Last week, Reuters and Agence France-Presse reported that at least 8,000 people have been wounded. And in fact, the New York Times report that you referred to, that also mentioned these injuries to people's, particularly the youth, to their eyesight or their eyes, because Indian forces are using pellet guns, which basically spray hundreds of steel pellets that are tipped with, you know, coated with rubber. And they consider them, quote-unquote, non-lethal weapons. Mm-hmm. There is nothing non-lethal about them. They have blinded about 150, 200 people.
The New York Times says 570.
Yeah, probably.
And it's called the epidemic of dead eyes.
Yes,
exactly. They know what they're doing when they with this weapon.
Absolutely, because, you know, they are shooting these pellet guns or bullets at young people. And these young people, you know, unfortunately, the way the situation has evolved, they don't have any leaders. There is no organization. This is just absolute frustration on the part of these youth because they are fed up with the Indian occupation army. And that totals something like 700,000 troops in Kashmir. It is the most heavily militarized region in the world. In fact, in the capital city, Srinagar, every neighborhood or every street, like, you know, at the end of a street, the people live in streets. You see, they're sort of from the main road, there will be a street that goes in, so there are houses on both sides. These are narrow alleys. And at the entrance to each of these narrow alleys, there are graveyards, because so many people have been killed. So there are, like, you know, there are no communal graveyards anymore. Basically, people have their own graveyards because of the number of deaths. Secondly, there have been literally thousands of people that were essentially kidnapped by the Indian occupation forces. They simply disappeared. And mass graves have been discovered in different parts of Kashmir. These have been reported on by Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, Even human rights organizations in India have reported on them. The BBC reported on them. In fact, they had a documentary on them many years ago. India simply refuses to carry out any investigations into that. Yeah. And one other point that I want to mention, mm-hmm. and that is that Indian troops have been involved in not only killings and torture and kidnappings, but their most egregious crime is the rape of Kashmiri women. Mm-hmm. From 1989, when the last uprising had begun, up to the present time, more than 11,000 Kashmiri women have been raped by Indian troops. And, the doctors in Srinagar, they had a seminar in 2015, in which they revealed some startling details. They said that in 2014, there were at least 3,500 women that had been raped by Indian troops. And they said that, number one, this figure is grossly underreported because many women, because of shame and stigma, do not report these things. But he said the greater tragedy is that out of the 3,500 reported cases, there was only one person out of 3,500 cases who was ever charged with this crime. Hmm. In 2015, there were 3,935 reported or registered cases of rape. Regrettably, not even one person has been charged with that. So you see that the Indian Army is doing a lot of terrible things, and unfortunately, governments around the world have maintained a deathly silence. In fact, our own government, Canada, has said nothing about it. Even though when the issue originally came to the Security Council back in 1948, at that time Canada was a rotating member of the Security Council, and Canada voted in that Security Council to have a referendum in Kashmir. That's the bottom line of the demand of the Kashmiri people.
And there's never been one.
It has never been one. India has consistently refused. It says there is no need for a referendum. We have had elections there, and that's it. And it's part of India, and you can do whatever you like.
Yeah.
And they are doing it at the point of the gun, at the point of the bayonet, killing people. So, from 1989 to the present time, about 100,000 people have been killed.
Mm.
So that gives you some indication.
Yeah, with 600,000 soldiers there, it's amazing. Heavy occupation of that region. We're speaking to Zafar Bengash, crescent-online.net. Zafar, there is one department, one way in which the Indians reveal that they do regard Kashmir as an exceptional people or nation. That is that this is the only people they use these pellet canisters against.
Is correct.
They do not use them against the Indian people.
Nobody.
And there's no shortage of political activity and riots and demonstrations in India itself, but they don't use this.
Exactly. This is the only place, in fact, in the world where pellet guns are used. And also, in the Indian Constitution, there is Article 370 that confers a special status on Kashmir. And this dates back to the Indian occupation of Kashmir, military occupation, back in October of 1947, when the ruler had fled the capital city, Srinagar, because the people at that time wanted to become part of Pakistan. And this was the agreement in terms of the partition of British colonial India into Pakistan and India. But the ruler happened to be Hindu, and he sort of had inclinations towards India. Mm. And so since that time, India has maintained its military grip. And even though its rulers promised to hold a referendum at that time, repeated from 1947 until about 1952. After that, they started to backtrack and start making excuses, and we have this situation today, unfortunately.
Yeah. Again, it's Zafar Bengash, crescent-online.net. Now, Zafar, Turkey is behaving somewhat erratically. What do you think is going on here with the incursion into Syrian territory? What are they trying to accomplish?
Well, basically, Turkey's primary goal is not to allow the Kurds of Syria, the northern part of Syria, to occupy any territory and to link up with the Kurds in Turkey. I'll have to say, I'm afraid the Kurds are not playing, not behaving very well either.
Oh, by the way, I have to really make sure I ask you this. There is always confusion about who. Is there one leadership, multiple leadership? Which Kurdish group is not, in your view, trustworthy exactly?
Well, in Turkey itself, there is a group called the PKK, the Kurdistan Workers' Party. they are, you know, they've been declared a terrorist organization. They've been involved in a lot of terrorist activities. Mm-hmm. In Syria, they call themselves, they don't even call themselves Kurds. Actually, they carry this name, Syrian Democratic Forces. Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, their aim, of course, is to carve out northern Syria and link up with the Kurds in southeastern Turkey so that they would form their own independent state of Kurdistan. And the Americans are backing the Kurds in Syria. So right now you have this very strange situation whereby Turkey, that is an ally of the United States, NATO member and so on, but it's fighting against the Kurds that are being backed by the U.S. So you have this strange situation emerging over there. And mm-hmm. Turkey is not doing anything to fight the terrorists, the ISIS terrorists, that have unfortunately caused a lot of chaos and mayhem in Turkey as well, with bombings and mm-hmm. suicide bombings and others. Like, you know, on August the 15th, there was a suicide bomber at a wedding in Gaziantep, which is actually a Kurdish area, but they killed about 50, 60 people. There was a wedding taking place. But Turkey has not said much about that, although it has issued mm-hmm. warnings. But its operations inside yeah. Syria with 50 tanks and special forces, etc., is primarily aimed against the Kurds.
Mm-hmm. Now, quickly, the American media is confused, and they're trying to figure it out. They say our friends are fighting our friends.
Exactly.
So they
keep funny companies.
Somebody is going to be betrayed. I don't know. Do you have an idea who it might be?
Well, I think the way it is going, it seems to me that Turkey obviously is absolutely determined that they are not going to allow the Kurds to have their own autonomous or independent state or region in that part of the world. Because for Turkey, that is, the Turks, at least from their point of view, they consider it absolutely crucial. Otherwise, Turkey is going to be split up, Syria is going to be split up, Iraq, for all practical purposes, has already been split up into three, mm-hmm. autonomous regions, and the Kurdistan, which is called the Iraqi Kurdistan, basically mm-hmm. operates as a de facto independent state, and that's something that Turkey simply will not allow.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, Zafar, we managed to cover the key issues, and my apologies to you because you're a brilliant analyst, and we really need your insight. Zafar Ben-Gayesh, crescent-online.net. Go there for greater detail. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Phil. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Take care.
Thanks. Bye-bye. This is Taylor Report, CIET 9.5 FM. We are on SoundCloud. And as I say, I wish I knew what I said when I said that, but we are on SoundCloud, so look us up. And of course, you can go to facebook.com/TheTaylor, the Taylor Report, not a The Taylor Report. And Charlotte, Phil, thank you very much, and see you next week.